Mukhanim? Okay, welcome everyone. Special welcome to my father. Amazing to have you here. He's been listening from the United States. Decided he had to fly in to hear it live.
So, thank you for the love.
So, it's humble. Baruch Hashem, we've had the schus of being joined so far this year by Rav Kook, by the Tiferes Shlomo of Radomsk. Who else? The first Lavashirevi, and who's the fourth?
Rav Tzadok.
And Rav Tzadok. And those, most of them have been a little further back, Rav Kook not so far back. The most recent one was Rav Kook, 1935. Today we have the opportunity to talk about somebody who actually died a few months before I was born, 1994. And this, the reason Yaakov Telles isn't here tonight is because I told him it was going to be very heavy, and he wasn't in the mood for heavy. But Mirtz Hashem, tonight we have a different job than usual, because tonight we're a little bit going to hell. We're going to Auschwitz with the Klosmerger Rebbe. So, we gotta get going. No one here has ever heard of the Klosmerger, right? Actually, in the Upper West Side for a while. So, fine, the Upper West Side. So, in 1905, the Klosmerger Rebbe, this beautiful Jew, was born in Romania. And so, who started Hasidus? Do we remember? Number one? Hashem Tov, where did he live? Mezhbish, I'm going for Shabbos. I'll send you regards. Okay, fine. Who's that? So, he lived in Mezhbish. Hashem Tov had a Talmud. Who is his number one Talmud? The Magid. Magid of Mezhbish. Magid of Mezhbish had another big Talmud named Velimelech of?
Lezhensk.
Who went to Lezhensk? Half of the room. Chaim, I think you were there. Last year. Yeah, definitely in Poland. If you go in the Poland gym, I believe you go. Velimelech had a Talmud known as the Jokester Rebbe, the Rupshitzer. Maybe it was the Rupshitzer one day. Rupshitzer had a Talmud in the Divrei Chaim of Tzanz. You ever heard of Tzanz? You ever been to Netanya?
Of course.
So in Netanya is a place called Kiryas Tzanz. Divrei Chaim had seven sons. One of those sons was Bubov. So he became the Rebbe of Bubov, I thought. Rebbe Bubov. Another one, the Rebbe of Shinov. Another one, the Rebbe of Kishinov. Another one, the Rebbe of Garlitz. The Rebbe of Garlitz had a grandson named Kusiel Yehuda. And he, at age 22, moved to Klosenberg. So Tzanz Klosenberg is how it's known, the Chassidus is known. And as you guys know, because this is more of a history thing, you guys have taken a Holocaust class before. In 1941, Germany invaded Hungary. And part of it, not the whole thing, but things began to get very difficult in Klosenberg. And he had been the Rebbe there, he was 36, he'd been the Rebbe there for a number of years. And to evade the Nazis in the beginning, before they really started rounding everybody up, he had to hide in a grave for 3 weeks. An open grave. Nothing more foreboding than that. Like, I actually once lied down in a grave. Very intense. Very, very intense. I'm telling you, imagine living there for 3 weeks. Like, that tells you about life when you live in a grave for 3 weeks. And so 41, he was running, they were escaping. But the story really begins in 1944. And just to organize tonight, there's four stages of the Klosenberger's life. Stage number one is pre-war. We already finished that stage. Stage number two, Holocaust. Stage number three, post-war, but still there. And stage number four is post-Holocaust. Like, after everything, after the war. So the Klosenberger in 1944 is sent to everyone's favorite place. His family was sent, him, 10 of his children, his wife, all sent to Auschwitz. His wife and children killed Yudolf Nissan, 1944. 10 kids, one day. Did not make it out. He was, for some reason, put into the work camp, and that's where he remained for a while. And the crazy thing about the Klosenberger, and I'm just going to tell it to you through through a bunch of stories. That's how we're going to do it. To this, first I want to share with you this. Usually we do the other way around. But, he did come. Here, so hand a few of these around. Usually we do this at the end, but today it's going to help understand everything. Let's work at a sefer called the Shevach Chaim. Shevach Chaim was his drashos and his ideas. And you learn Shevach Chaim? A good friend of mine, Aaron Toledano, Shlita, maybe listening from New York. There's in Teaneck now. He's big chassid of the Shevach Chaim. I told him, I said, send me your favorite Torah. And he sent me this one. And you gotta read this, it's crazy. Listen to this. This is what he said on Chanukah. Shemati mitzadikim. Teklal gadol hu is a big klal. Shemi sheyesh lo bitachon amiti b'Hashem Yisbarach. Someone who has real faith in Hashem. E efshar sheyikra lo me'uma. Nothing can happen to him. Nothing at all. Skip down a few lines. V'im chas v'shalom. Nigzar al ha'adam. Eza onesh. The fourth line. Min ha'shamayim. O reishis davar. Machnisim rifayim midas bitachono. In order for anything bad to happen to someone, says the Kozenberger, there needs to be a weakening in his bitachon. So the first part of the gzera before Hashem sends something bad his way, first Hashem weakens his bitachon. Hashem does it. And then he says, just like Paro, b'chinas v'chazik, Hashem is leif Paro, me'achar she'ovet bitachono, shuv alul nevgoa bo'kumi ha'pronos, then bad things can happen. But this is crazy. Omer tzadikim, shemikom makom, Hashem says, I'm going to weaken your midah of bitachon, of your faith, of your trust, but you can still overcome it. Like Hashem dafka weakens you. And then a bad thing can happen, but you have the opportunity. Like Paro, yeah, how do you answer the kasha? Hashem strengthened Paro's heart. How is it his fault? Terence? He weakened it, but he could have strengthened himself. And that's what he says. And I look down, look further down, and this is four paragraphs down, Biachomi. This is his main idea. And he says like this. His mom, she's never seen this in a sefer, I guarantee it. Biacholani leha'ir al davar zemitov nisim. I can testify this is true. Ba'eis sheganu lemachanos ha'ashmada etal rishon yimach shemam v'zivram. When we reached the death camps, the amadnu sham be'erum, when we stood naked, with a choser kol bli malbushim, we had no clothing, bli kisa, the rishim didn't even have a yarmulke on our heads. Harishayim hiku lelo herif, and they beat us without stopping. Ba'alo should be damned with their sticks. The matzav hayad bechi ra, it could not get worse. Panisi az la'odim sivivi v'tzaakti le'avram, and I turned to those around me, and I yelled to them, Yehudim. Di'u lachem she'Hashem Yisbarach mechakeh lanu sham b'soch ha'machaneh. We've arrived, but Hashem is waiting for us. Omnom nimsanu bidei Rishayim, in the hands of the Rishayim. Avol al lanu l'shkoach she'Hashem itanu. We're in the middle of a death camp, but don't forget that Hashem is here. U'v'meshech kol ha'shana she'isi sham. The whole year that I was there in Auschwitz, I was working on this, trying to arouse everyone, to encourage everyone. Lo l'shkoach she'Hashem itanu. Not to forget that Hashem is with us. U'melo chol aretz kavodo gam be'Auschwitz v'dachau. That Hashem is in every corner of the world, even in Auschwitz and Dachau. B'les asar panoim yineh. We spoke about this when we spoke about the Alter Rebbe. That he would say, even this table is Hashem. But he never had to say even the death, even the crematorium is Hashem. That's where the Klosenberger lived. He looked, said face to face the crematorium and said, Hashem is right there. In that smoke, Hashem is there. We're living in Hashem's ratzon. If Hashem didn't want us to live, it doesn't matter where we are, we're going to live. If he doesn't want us to live, b'chol makom sheba'olam, even if we're in the greatest place in the world, we're going to die. We only need Hashem. Hashem uzi uma uzi menusi biyom tzara. Hashem is always here. Hashem is there, no matter what's happening to us. Breathe that in. The Klosenberger, when he was in the camps, was transcendent. Transcendent means that no matter where he was, he wasn't there. They used to say that Auschwitz was a planet in itself. But the Klosenberg in that planet was on another planet. He's on the moon. He kept every single halacha. He never ate treif. He kept Shabbos. He kept every yontif. He never missed a bracha. He put a tefillin every day. You know what? Like, they took everything. How did he do it? He didn't even eat a tissue. Everything that was mutter, he didn't do. Of course you can eat treif. Of course you can eat anything. Bread and water is all he would do. And the transcendence, like when they would do the select, they would line up. Like he was saying over here, someone who was with him in the camp writes about that he was next, like they were doing the selection, they were like just choosing Jews at random to just kill. Everyone was lining up at 5 a.m. naked, and they would just kill people. And the Klosenberger had a group huddled around him. What was he saying? Avinu Malkeinu, Krarog said, Avinu Malkeinu, Nekom Leinenu Nekmas Dam Avdecha Shafuch. Avinu Malkeinu. He was saying Avinu Malkeinu as everyone was crying with him quietly. Avinu davening the whole time. When everyone was broken after a hard day of work in the barracks, the Klosenberger could be heard whispering in his bed, Mimkomcha Malkeinu Sophia, Hashem, we're waiting for you. Similar, like, can we imagine in the worst hell to be thinking about Geula? That's where he was. He wasn't there. And the craziest part is that he would also often say, Imo Anochi Betzara. You know who said Imo Anochi Betzara? It means I'm with you also in the suffering. Hashem. Hashem says to us, Imo Anochi, whenever you're suffering, I'm suffering too. It's the Klosenberger, when he and all the Jews were in Auschwitz, who was he concerned about? Hashem, this looks bad for you. I'm sorry that you're suffering also. And it would pain him. And every time he'd get beaten, he would say, I didn't serve you with enough joy. He would say, I'm being Mekai in the Tocha. I understand why this is happening. I deserve this. There's a story that once he was walking around and he looked in a garbage pile and he saw a couple pieces of paper with Hebrew writing. So he runs over to look at it. And he picks up this small piece of paper, looks at it, looks at the Hebrew letters, sees his Perkei Avos, starts crying. Picks up Perkei Avos, goes to the barracks. That night, Chabur and Perkei Avos. In the barracks, everyone was so excited to hear from him. I learned with my dad when Rav Asher Weiss told us once that his father. You guys heard of Rav Asher Weiss? His father. So Rav Asher Weiss is a Klosenberger chassid. How is he a Klosenberger chassid? Because his father, who was not Hasidish, snuck in to be in the Klosenberger's barrack, just to be close to him, and he came so close to him, and that's when he became a Klosenberger chassid. I'll tell you something else. Is a crazy. This story I think is unbelievable. The Klosenberger, like I told you, he never broke shop. He never broke any halacha. He was mekayem and everything. So 1 year Shemini Atzeres, they had a ton of work to do, and Klosenberger said, "I'm not working Shemini Atzeres. Like it's Shemini Atzeres. Like I don't care where I am. Like I'm davening. It's Simchas Torah. Shemini Atzeres." And so he didn't go to work that day. And you know the Nazis, they checked every single person. They knew where everybody was. And he was back in the barracks, davening, Shemini Atzeres. And they do a lineup. And there's one prisoner missing. There's one Jew that's missing. And the Nazis cared so much about every single Jew that they said, okay, they figured out who it was. It was a Klosenberger. And they went into, and everyone was lined up. They took him out of the barrack. Imagine, this is the Rebbe. And they stripped him naked, and they beat him in front of everybody until he almost died. Beat him to the ground, he was bleeding, he was coughing up blood. And everyone thought he was going to die. His mom was this close to death. And then everyone went back to work. And they expected, okay, the Klosenberger was going to be in the hospital for a few days, infirmary recovering. They get back from work that day, they go to the barracks, and they see the Klosenberger. He's holding a couple pages of the Mishnayos on it, limping, going around in a circle doing a kavos. It's hard to understand, but like, that's the strength of a Jew. Imagine. That's unbelievable. He's dancing after he's beaten like that. But eventually, Baruch Hashem, they made it out. And as you know, when they started liquidating the camps a little bit, so they had these things called, you ever heard of death marches? Death marches, they'd walk them 21 miles a day. People that had no food, anything in their stomachs. Well, Ashkenaz did. And on one of these marches, the closing meridian was shot. And he knew that if he went to the infirmary, they're probably going to kill him. So he couldn't go anywhere. And he takes a leaf and he puts it on his like thing to like stop the bleeding. And at that moment, he said to himself, if I make it out of here, I'm gonna make a hospital. I'm going to build a hospital. And if you go to Netanya today, you'll see a hospital that services 500,000 people a year, 500,000 people. And that was built by the Klosner Rebbe. 15 years, when he made it out eventually, he fundraised and built a hospital that's Al Pi Halacha, that serves everybody. You can see in Netanya, is that what it's called again?
Laniado.
Zach, what was that? You went to the hospital?
Yeah,
what? Laniado also?
Next to the hotel, that sounds.
The hospital is next to the hotel?
Yeah, it's a connection.
So I was right there?
Yeah.
I got a shock just then. Okay, so he ends up building this house and getting shot. But I just, so, Baruch Hashem, eventually, throughout this hell, he eventually makes it out. But he didn't go anywhere. So you guys, you ever heard of President Dwight Eisenhower?
Yeah.
Right, where is he from? America, right? Good.
He's from
American president. So he used to be, he was a general first in the army. And he had the schus. Hashem chose him to liberate the Jews. And he came to the camps. And, you know, not everyone in the camp was like a chassidish rabbi, right? There were a lot of non-religious people who were also killed by the Nazis, also killed and also rounded up by the Nazis. And Dwight Eisenhower was going to come and speak. So who should meet with Dwight Eisenhower in front of everybody? So most of the chavra said, okay, of course, the Klosner Magarebi. But all the not from Chavra, all the people that were like, we're not, you know, they didn't really care about that, the Klosner Magarebi. They said, no, we're not going to allow it. And they discussed, and eventually they said, fine, the Klosner Magarebi can go, but on few conditions. He can't mention anything about God, and he can't, speak for more than a few minutes, and like, that's it, just be cordial and like be nice, and that's it. So they said, okay, fine, and obviously the Klosner Magarebi was not going to listen. And as he's getting up to walk up to Dwight Eisenhower, someone like shovels him a talus, gets in front of everybody, the entire camp. Wraps up a talus. No one had seen anybody put on a talus like that in months. Puts on his talus, speaks to Dwight Eisenhower, and he tells him, thanks him for Hashem bringing him. He tells him what they went through, and Eisenhower asks for. He says, "What can I get you?" And the Klosner Rebbe says, every single Jew in this camp, a set of Arba Minim. Eisenhower understood from this moment that like there's more to the Jew than just like, okay, can I get like a lafa? He didn't ask for shawarma for everybody, like this isn't like Mishmar. can we get these Jews some Arba Minim? It's been so long. And the crazy thing is, though, what happens when everyone gets liberated? You can't go anywhere. Your house, everything's destroyed. The goyim stole everything. Right? They were waiting for the Jews to get kicked out in Europe. They left their homes. They took all their stuff. Can you imagine this? When Jews were being rounded up, the non-Jews went to their homes and said, do you mind if I take your stuff before you leave so I can make sure I get it? That's what happened in Klosenberg. The neighbors, they went to the house to get their stuff. And then they were stuck in a camp. So now what do? So the camps, the Klosner Magarebi, as soon as they liberated, the Klosner Magarebi went to the camps, in the DP camps, displaced persons camps. They know where to go. He built yeshivas in what used to be concentration camps. He worked on kashras in those camps. He got everybody tzitzis, got everybody tefillin, got sifrei Torah, got sfarim, built cheders for the kids. In what used to be a death camp. And he managed, ran all this thing for years. Went back to America to fundraise, came back to the concentration camps. To fundraise. And the thing that he loved doing most was teaching little children. Because he loved little kids. And he, can you imagine, all these kids not enough parents. Hundreds, thousands of kids not enough parents. And he would say to them, he'd say like, look, your parents are listening to every word. Like, you can learn Chumash with them. And he'd say like, your parents are listening to every single word. Afterwards, eventually made it out of the DP camps, made it to the Upper West Side, made it to a few years Upper West Side, eventually decided he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, build Netanya, build Kiryat Sanz. But one last story before we get... Well, I'll just say first. So he gets to America. Everybody's out. Builds up success a little bit. And then he says, okay, we want to move to Eretz Yisrael. Because the whole point of this was to move to Eretz Yisrael. Goes to Eretz Yisrael, builds Kiryas Sanz in Netanya. Eventually builds a community union city also in New Jersey. And that's Kiryas Sanz today. That's in Netanya. Big, big Chassidish city. He built it. One of his first years out, the Klozenberger Rebbe was davening for the Amud. And one of the most fascinating things about the Klozenberger Rebbe was, like, the way I like to say it is that the Klozenberger Rebbe felt like he was a ben. It wasn't just an Oved Hashem. He was Hashem's son. And he would speak to Hashem directly. He would, like, call out to Hashem, like, I'm right now, like, Hashem, like, what's going on? Like, I'm waiting for you. He would just, like, yell at all the time. And he would daven, he would be like, and he would, like, mix up the words of davening. He would go, and he would mix up all the words of davening. They all made sense. But he would, like, in Yaz Yashir, he would say, what does that mean? Bring us, plant us, in Eretz Yisrael, in the mountain of Arnachala, Eretz Yisrael, our inheritance. Chassidim that around him, he would say it for a full hour. He would say, Tiviemus, Hashem, come on. Bring us, Eretz Yisrael. Bring us, Eretz Yisrael, over and over for a full hour. He would say those words that I don't even get to say every day. And it's like, he was a son to Hashem. Mamish felt like a son. And one year, Yom Kippur, Kol Nidre night, the Klozenberger Rebbe is happening for the Amud. And he was very, very weak. He had almost no, he was still so weak from everything. And he finishes Kol Nidre, and then he stops. Instead of starting Maariv, he goes to the Parochas. And he starts saying Vidui. But he doesn't say like, Ashamnu, Bogadnu, Gazalnu. He goes, Ashamnu! Were we traitors? It's like, Hashem, we didn't do this. Like, you destroyed, we didn't do this. Gazalnu, did we steal anything? It's like, maybe I stole because one night my skin got cut on the bed in one of the barracks and I said, ow, and I might have woken someone up a little bit. Okay, fine, maybe Gazan. Did Baron Adobe, what did I say bad about anybody? The Nazis, fine. Havinu had a shot, and he goes to each one saying to Hashem, we didn't do this. We don't deserve what you did to us. Each one, he said, and he goes to the whole Vidoy. Havinu had a shot, Tavalnu Sheker, Yatnu, Kizavnu, Latsnu. None of it. And then he says, you know what, Hashem, this vidui is not for us at all. Basically, throws, this is not our vidui. So what? Okay, maybe you could say, we lack bitachon in you. We didn't trust you enough. When something terrible is happening, maybe for a second we thought you're not here. And he said, okay, fine, that's what we did wrong. But the Klozenberger Rebbe's vidui that year, It explains everything. He was just well above. And moved to Eretz Yisrael, established yeshivas for all these kids. Everything, he built tens and tens of yeshivas and chadarim, which he called She'eris HaPleita, which means the leftovers who escaped. And the most beautiful thing is that when the kids would be sleeping, like late at night, he would like go into their rooms and check if everybody's sleeping well. And he would put their blankets on them if they weren't fully covered by the warmth. He would like, because he was like the father of everybody. A little arm rub. So that's the life of the Klozenberger Rebbe. You see, look, we read one Torah. Isn't it the exact same? What I read to you, this piece and all the stories we just shared. I think that I don't usually tell you what the Messer is, but I think with the Klozenberger Rebbe it's a little bit hard because he was such an exalted person. He was unbelievable. And it kind of might seem like it's a little bit too far out. I'll tell you, I don't think it's too far out at all. I think that every once in a while, Hashem sends us someone to show us who we can be. He wasn't like we said about Rav Tzadok, like crazy, super genius, age one. This was a Jew. I'm like, what, you can't also trust Hashem? You can't also talk to him like that? Maybe like getting beaten, dancing, I don't know. But everyone of, like you can tell, every single one of us has part of that. The ability to be above, that's what it means to have a neshama. And I'm not bound to a cheeseburger. There's more to me than just eating. There's more to me than just playing basketball. There's like another world that I'm part of. I'm not just here on earth. There's something beyond. And Kozma Rogerebi was so attached to the beyond that even when he was here, nothing could stop him. He spent 50 years after the Holocaust creating a new world. After not giving up. It's like, it's impossible to understand. But if you look deep enough, it's within all of us, I'm sure. And then also B is, and this is just like a practical little thing, when you're davening, try to do this also. Try to like take a line. One of the things that I like to do is, V'havascha atasim melilamim. Say it 10 times in Maariv. You can play around with davening. You're a ben. You're a ben of Hashem. You're not just an eved. You're a ben. Like, it's my dad. I can say things to my dad that I can't say to my boss. You have to be nice. You have to have kavod, of course. But at the same time, like, Hashem, your father cares about you. Your father cares, and if you're crying to your father, then like, last night I put my daughter to sleep. And what do you do when your daughter's crying when she's going to sleep? You say okay. You say Shema. You say Hamalach, and you walk out to cry yourself to sleep. But after like 5 minutes, she was doing, you know, she wasn't just crying, she was yelling, Abba. She was going, Abba! So I had no choice. I have to go back in. If she was working for me, would I care? Maybe. She's my daughter. I'm her father. I can't say no to that. So that's what we have to understand, is the relationship the Kozma Rebbe had with Hashem is the relationship that we all have with Hashem. We just have to realize it. We're banim atem Hashem Elokecha. We have to learn how to speak to our father the way your son speaks to his father. That's for tonight, the closing murder. Today I have, thanks to Ilan. Ilan's guitar. That's very smart.
That's a big guitar.
I know. It sounded different also. So excuse me if I... Sorry. Ezra, please get the lights. Or Zach. It's that one. For those who have never been here before, the words are Mazze Omer Li. Because after we go through something like that, we don't just now know something, but we're supposed to be different. So, we have to figure out how it affects us.
Yeah.
Just go ahead, boys. Remember, we have to leave smiling. That was the one rule. He made it out. Just go ahead, guys. Just go ahead for coming, everyone.
Yes. Light me the fucking.